Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Looks like about 40% of this season's going to be in the dark. I'll try to make it as sexy as possible. So tonight, I'm going to talk about what are facts anyway. So, two of the most important females in my life, they ingest the show sparingly, thank God. But both of them don't know it. But they have come to me and said, you know, can you please do something about how you get your facts and validate yourself a little bit? And so their objective is the same. The objective is to say, you make videos for hours and hours and hours. You talk about very important subjects. And so how do you get your facts? And that's at least a double-edged sword. On one level, you know that if you're a chronic listener, much of what I talk about is my interpretation of things. And so the need for facts is not as intense as someone reporting the news. And claiming to be the news, and claiming to be anything other than entertainment. However, we do talk about factual things. I got an episode on cancer. I got an episode on, tons of episodes on the moon. I mention things over and over and over again to reinforce it, to make sure that you start repeating it on your end as a topic of discussion. Not that I am correct about anything, but so that you say, is Joe Biden really that weird? Well, let's look it up on YouTube. He says it's on YouTube. He grabs little girls' boobies right in front of their parents, right on camera. C-SPAN, thank God, exists. What's funny for me is that the chronology of me either deducing something or learning something, putting it in an episode, and then 2 years later it becomes the talking point of the world is hilarious. It happens a lot. And still, my episode on how they spy on you, I watched a whole freaking hour-long special about how you protect yourself from security today and all this other stuff. And it is so juvenile and so naive about how they do data gathering in this world. I mean, people are talking about consumer-level products and consumer-level strategies and not looking at how they actually do it. And if you need to see it, one, jump over to the Deep Thoughts Season 1 channel, subscribe for me, and catch that episode on how they spy on you. It's a lot better than watching the one on this channel way back in Season 1 with all the just the bad microphone levels and all that other stuff. But anyway, I need to do an episode that really discusses how we figure this stuff out. So on one side, I have the burden of, you know, qualifying anything I'm saying. So I think it's this way. I think I remember it that way. I was told it was that way. So that you know that there's a buffer between me and de facto reality. Believe me, I try to get a bunch of stuff correct. When I get things incorrect, it's a very interesting thing that occurs. If you're just talking to your buddy at a bar, at a restaurant, at work, whatever, car ride, and you get something wrong, maybe your buddy has about a 30% chance of remembering that. If the conversation's super interesting to your friend, then they might have about a 95% chance of remembering what you said. And if they find out that you're wrong, not that you try to manipulate your friend or anything, but you just got a number off or something like that, they may come back to you and say, hey, you know that thing you said? I looked that up, and it's actually this, not that. Oh, really? Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. That's how it goes in normal organic life. When you do what I do on this show, and every episode's watched anywhere from 500 to 1,500 times before shadow banning really takes effect, I get a lot of comments about what I get wrong. I love it. Because it's a process where I refine my factoids People provide links. They provide mostly video links because we're on YouTube. A lot of you folks will send me off to some website or some webpage, or you'll at least tell me in words, hey, you need to look up this person. Check it out. Some of you who know how to really use the indexes, in like the time indexes in your comments, you help me out so much. You're like, hey, at 15 minutes and 20 seconds, you said this. What the heck did you mean? Or I think you're off base. And then there's the other part of the debate, which is obviously one of the most incredible gifts we have as human beings, is that we get to debate what we believe about something. Do you think Michael Jackson did it or not? We get to debate. We get to weigh facts and read body language and all that good stuff. Very powerful. But that's the easy side of the sword. The tough side of the sword is perceived facts. I have mentioned this off and on. I did an episode about disinformation. I haven't watched it probably since I published it. Might be a little bit of overlap. I know I've said some of this stuff, but we're going to have such a pure, unadulterated analysis of this that hopefully it will change your life a little bit. And I think a lot of you know this, and I think a lot of you, even if I'm mentioning something new, you felt it down inside your soul. And so hopefully me putting this into words will get you to go, oh my God, you're right. Or that's how I feel. That's how I felt about this, you know, forever, for a very long time. And it was through working with these close friends of mine that I was able to hear them go through a circular logic situation. I don't mean circular logic as in it was a bad logic loop. They went through their loop, their ecosystem of like having me tell them something, and then they reach out and I can see it in their head. They're reaching out for their methodology of evaluating what they believe to be true or false, and then bringing it back to me and going, question mark. And the reason why these two females are bringing this to me is that they have super high integrity levels. Very smart women. Love it. Keep me on my toes. Information. Marshall McLuhan, you've heard me say this several times. He invented the term media, and he is the one, medium is the message. What he was talking about was, and his in one of his in philosophies, the guy almost lived 100 years. And so in the late 60s, he was in his late 60s, and he was just a brilliant human being. Actually, I don't know if that's exactly correct, but he was pretty weathered by the late 60s when he did his, I believe it's a 1968 Playboy interview that was printed, and you can go read it anytime you want. It is meaty, let me tell you. It is Jean Beaujolard level stuff, you know. But his thing was to tell you that the way that you get your information is more important to you than the information that you actually get out of the medium itself. Now, first time I heard that, I was like, oh, okay, we got to parse some words here. What are you actually saying? You know, it's like that old phrase, it's better to take a shorter amount of time to do the job right than a longer amount of time to do the job wrong. And you're like, what? Yeah, of course. What that means is there's no shortcuts. Do it right the first time. Shortcuts only lead to more delays and more foul-ups and bad testing and whatever you're doing. But now, I have to create an image in your head. So I want you to take everyone that you think is alive in the world, from zero to perhaps maybe 110 or something like that. And of course, after someone hits about 100, their participation in reality is a little bit different. They don't really probably get into the newspaper that much, if their eyes even work enough. But I don't want to sell a 95-year-old short, because I've met some that were strong as oxes and looked like they were 40 years younger than they were. But you divide everyone up in the world into decades. Decades of age. 0 through 10, 11 through 20, 21 through 30, all the way up to 100 years old. We know that every decade grows up, especially in America, grows up in a different era of perception. In the last 119 years, we have gone from printed press newspapers that are handed out every single day with extra editions here and there into broadcast radio. It went on and on and on, still exists, right? It's kind of all junk now. Then we have television, still going strong. Now, I could say movies, because they did do some propaganda films here and there. That came and went pretty quickly, so I don't really think that that's where we necessarily get facts. We watch documentaries on TV if we're going to see something in a film fashion. But sometimes we go to the movie theaters and see things like Inconvenient Lie. But now we have HTTP protocol and the internet. Now we have hybrids like podcasting and that sort of thing. But you feel me, right? Before the printed press, as in newspapers, we had books. Books still exist, don't they? Sadly, we don't buy enough of them. Another hybrid would be magazine. It's important that I throw all these images into your brain, because what we're going to do is we're going to divide these things up into those decades. If I asked you, a 100-year-old person today would have been born in 1919. Now, one set of my grandparents were young kids around that time, and one of my grandparents, hadn't been born yet. So that's how near that 100 years is from right now. I'm just telling you, I've lost, and all my grandparents are gone now, but books and newspapers would have been the top authority in the world at that time, aside from going to a lecture or something, right? Then there was the radio. And there's a whole different group of folks inside the radio, because it's not when you're born that you think that that's a particular medium. It's when you become intellectual and wake up. So, I don't know my grandparents' age, how much they started reading newspapers, how much they cared about the news. It was partially global, mostly local, maybe national at best. One of my set of grandparents was born in 1910 and 1912. So, you have to give them about 20 years before you start, thinking about them ingesting news in the 30s, in the 1930s. Let's just go with them. For them, the newspaper and books and radio was a way to get information. And then there's this integrity substrate to each one of those mediums. Well, who's talking on the radio? Who's writing the book? Who's writing the newspaper? It depends. You become loyal. And I'm not sure if this took place, but you know how we are with the internet, Again, as soon as a celebrity dies, some people rush to their Facebook app to tell everybody that someone died. It's like spreading the bad news or spreading this. It's almost like you feel, like it used to be back in the day, you would go to record stores and you'd search around for crazy LPs that no one knew, and you'd stick it, you record it down in some way, you can get it into your car on cassette tape or whatever it was, and then you'd play it and you'd drive down the street and people are like, what are you listening to? That's the craziest, coolest music. And it made you look cool because you had the ear to find it and you had the patience and you knew where to go. First time I played my buddy Zap Roger stuff in the 90s, I had my friend go, where do you find this kind of music? I love it, but I've only heard it every once in a while, kind of in the distance. I never had someone find it. So there is some sort of mental bond and identity when you bond to a particular medium. And that's what Marshall McLuhan had seen in his own lifetime. He literally watched the transformation from radio to television, out of newspapers. So just to sum it up, because I know you can see this coming a mile away, these mediums are de facto sources within various age groups and various decades. Sometimes it might go for 2 decades, sometimes it might go for 3 decades before another information type shows up. I think it'll be quite a while before we have another information type show up. I mean, we're going to have AR, but all that's going to do is feed web to your brain, But this is where people start to form their loyalties and thus their authority with the rest of the world. And so when someone comes in and says, you're wrong, hey, they could be right. They could have been there. They could just have done multiple sources. They take all those sources and cut through it. Because of the internet now, we have really good citizens on the ground analyzing stuff. I mean, we've never had news analyzed at the level it's being analyzed now, especially since the 17 movement, ever in history. It's amazing how much they dig and dig and dig. And yeah, some people dig and find things that don't really exist. We're going to have some fun with that this year. But a lot of times they can figure out what's going on. So for me, when I answer this question, I obviously am a very talkative person with everyone that I'm close to. And I only surround myself with people that are like me in most cases. But I do have family members that you love forever, and they don't have to be like you. You're going to keep them in your circle for life because you're related to them. Some of them made you. And so it's interesting. You just sit and you listen and you hear propaganda and you hear a total lack of research in a lot of cases. But you know where they got that information. They got that information from bookstores, newspapers, posh magazines that make them feel like they're really informed. And all it has to do is imitate the algorithm of integrity. And I, you know, at times I check myself, you know, I know people that keep magazines in their homes to look intelligent, to look affluent. And I went back because when I first moved here, like I've said 100 times, I was subscribing to a bunch of scientific magazines and a bunch of scientific book clubs and psychology book clubs. I mean, I have books coming in my house by the crates, and I thought, well, did I do that to look smart or something? And I was trying to analyze all the conversations I've had, because I would use those rags, you know, my source of information, which was very, you know, I think, mainstream, to have conversations with people. But there was no time, and I didn't really have guests over my places wherever I lived. And so there was really no time to behave like that. And I was always ingesting the book so fast that there was just no time to look up and create a veneer of gloating or some weird, you know, self-congratulatory thing about it. But I find that those that do, and this would be more my family members than anything else, they do have this interesting quaff of the way they communicate. It's usually let in by sort of a sarcastic giggle that you're wrong. And this sort of super superior attitude of, let me tell you how this really works. And they won't necessarily say you're wrong. They're just going to talk to you like you're a little kid. And all they've done is picked up a mainstream rag and ingested it. They went to Barnes & Noble and picked it up. And it's subjective history, it's subjective opinions about things in some cases. In other cases, it's full-blown obfuscation and concealment of the facts so that no one can figure out what's going on. But it's written to make you feel like that's occurring. It's crazy how it works. Now, the people that are asking me to do this episode, or at least to answer this question, one person has asked me to do an episode. The other person is just pushing me on this issue. So this is great. I get to make an episode for both of them at the same time. They just want to make sure that I'm not misleading people, that I'm not getting caught up in my own hubris. One of them says I riff, and riffing is dangerous. Fair comment. But again, having an opinion between two friends is one thing, and that's what 99% of the world does because they don't have YouTube shows. But the second you put your money where your mouth is and you push it on the net, there's a lot of discernment and there's a lot of critiquing. You know, if this channel ever got popular, which it won't, the pressure would be even heavier on me, and there'd be a lot of comments. No, you're wrong there, you're wrong here, you're wrong. And then when someone tells you that you're wrong, you have to look at what they're saying and figure out where they got their information from to see how they feel. I watched this video today. I'm going to loop back on this because it was a very interesting thing. It was a video by two really cool people who are trying to make the world a better place. And so one of the conversations started in on how we can, again, protect ourselves from being snooped on by these surveillance agencies. And just to be specific for a second, the question was a fairly detailed conversation about VPNs and how they protect an individual's location, the integrity of the data, such that, you know, you can't steal packets off that line and look into them. And it, what I have to tell you is that at times I have been trained by the top humans on this planet for those sorts of things. And then because I have such a fundamental knowledge of the internet, I mean, you have to understand, I was in the internet in 1996 writing web servers from scratch and web clients from scratch and studying all the packet data going back and forth and studying the hardware that I had to transmit over. And then I was trained by a security expert who had just secured NORAD. Private session, me, him. Days. And so when I look at these conversations, I'm the guy smirking. I'm the guy, you know, you think you're secure. And again, I learned about things that I've shared with you. I mean, again, go look at the episode on how they spy on you. It is, quite frankly, the most profound reveal of how they do it. I've never seen anyone even remotely talk about this. Not in one conversation anywhere in the world has anyone told you what I told you in that episode. But if you watch it, it'll change everything for you, because you'll know nothing's secure. There's nothing you can do. There is nothing you can do besides write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to the other person and go, don't fucking say a word. Don't say a word. Because if you speak this out loud, they're going to know what's on that letter. And then you both burn it together. That's the only way you can transmit information from one person to another. It's probably better than sign language. If a packet of information travels over the internet, it is grabbed, period. It is decoded, period. And if one packet came across that internet that was not capable of being parsed within a split second, they would send people on planet Earth to where you are. And believe me, you cannot hide with proxy servers and daisy chains and all this other crap. You cannot hide where you are. You can't. You think you can. You could turn your logging off on your server. Your server has nothing to do with the problem. Your mobile device has nothing to do with the problem. Your desktop has nothing to do with the problem. But someone might watch that video. This person wasn't selling anything necessarily. A bunch of conspiracy channels pump all this VPN crap, all this privacy stuff. Now, what it will do is keep the little guys out of your devices. Some little firm in China, some little firm in Russia or India that's been paid to steal information off your phone and then send you an email telling you they've locked your phone or whatever. Or maybe even that actually really occurring, which I've never heard actually occurring. Just the threat of it having occurred, where it's like, I've locked your computer out, and if you don't give me, you know, $400 in iTunes cards, then da-da-da-da-da. If you feel like the information that you have is true, you're going to double down on that information. And it's only partially important in this conversation when we're talking about sharing it with another human being. What's more vital and more paramount is that you believe information at all, from anywhere. So the problem I get into when someone says, okay, speak to me with 100% facts. Okay, JFK's dead. Hitler's dead. There's some facts for you. Anything in the modern spectrum of time? I don't know. What are we talking about? Because I see this immediately as the person on the other side has a paradigm. It makes, they've picked sources that make them feel comfortable. Some people will say this person has a degree in something. And so they immediately become truth seers. And I'm a horse's ass. That degree could be 40 years old. Could be a PhD. Hell, man, they could have been top in their class. Maybe it's only 20 years old. But they didn't practice that degree at all. They didn't go back for a refresher course. And so that information is atrophied. Whereas what we do on this show is obsess and dig and get into it, make episodes, and then we hear each other talk, and you guys correct me, and you guys extend my mind and enlighten me. You know what's interesting about doing this show, and you may not have thought about this, but I'll tell you. A lot of you, like me, up until 2014, I'd say really 2015 when this show existed, you may have had, let's just say, one of the luckiest people in the world, and you had half a dozen mentors across your entire lifespan. Do you know how many mentors I've had since 2015? Every single person who posted an intelligent comment on either the YouTube channel or the Locke Facebook group. You guys mentor me like crazy. You inspire me. You inform me. You triangulate data for me. And so I feel like I am the utter benefactor. I'm in the center of a triangle. I don't know what the other side is or the other point on the triangle is, but I'm benefiting greatly. And it has extended my vision of the world, and it's humbled me greatly. The battle of facts is the battle of perception. And as much as some things are thought to be scientific, there's a couple little gotchas there. I'm going to dive off in science things because that's where we think things are fairly ironclad. Like I said, chemistry is chemistry is chemistry. Now, why things in chemistry at a subatomic level might be occurring, well, we could parse the atom, seriously, get down into it. I'm going to think it's ethereal winds and currents. Someone else might think it's just stops at quarks, that's it. But it doesn't really matter. Chemists can learn how things work, and when they mix this together with that, and it happens, right? Mathematics is pure and perfect. But the insinuation on top of mathematics, the variables in a formula, could be completely bunk. All these dimensions that scientists find. Well, that's just a methodology of discussing different categories of entities of thoughts. E equals mc squared, I think, is wrong. At least as it pertains to the speed of light and mass and movement and inertia. Someone might say, well, we know how fast light travels. I thought that was a constant that everyone agreed on around the world. And then I saw this beautiful video that was recapping every single scientific community in different countries throughout decades and decades and decades. When they figured out how to measure the speed of light, they're coming up with all kinds of different speeds. Now, generally, it's super fast. It's not going to come in at 2 miles an hour, but it's different. But isn't it supposed to be a certainty? Think about the moon landings. Okay. Well, how do you figure out they're a hoax? And how do you figure out they're real? You can't just go to some institution to read a book to figure it out. I mean, you can't just read it and have it sink into your brain, this is true, this is false. Because most of all of the documentation that's in bookstores says it's true. Colleges say it's true. Scientists say it's true. Average citizens that know nothing say it's true. Well, then it must be true, right? You start using logic. On this show alone, I have gone from sort of the low-hanging fruit, episode 26, episode 165. You know, 165, I started digging out my own stuff. That started feeling really good to me. And then lately, we have focused on batteries. We have focused on the amount of voltage to cool an astronaut inside of a suit that's got, again, 500-degree swings between the front and the back. If they're facing perpendicular to the sun. We've had two air conditioner experts come in and say the exact same thing. That is thinking. That is intelligence. And it supersedes this crappy thing that we call facts these days. I almost feel like facts, the word fact, needs to be something that is indivisible. I said, but let me change the person so it's a little more bright. Walt Disney, I could say, is dead. And everybody goes, yeah, he's dead. Okay. I met the guy at the park, and he took me to Bob Gurr. I went to the kiddie part of the park, which I never go to for any reason at all. I went from the bank, which was in the front right of the park, right when you go into the bridge with the railroad track over your head. I walked straight from that, straight to that dude. No detours, no where am I. I walked straight to the guy over by the submarine ride, which is now Finding Nemo. So what was the fact again? Oh, yeah. Walt Disney's dead. Okay. Well, then I'm a magician. I am a superhuman. I am an alien with powers you all should fear. Or maybe Walt isn't dead yet. So fact has got to have something that's indivisible. What do we know about Walt? His human flesh body no longer operates like a living human body. Who knows where his head and brain are, you know, maybe in some jar or something. But that's what I think is true. But now how do I prove that without exuding his body and doing a DNA test? Again, facts cannot have any variable that could parse it in a subjective way to reinterpret the fact. The fact needs to be 100%. 1 plus 1 equals 2. That's a pretty good fact. But then that fact would only be a number set. Two people working together, 1 plus 1, is way more powerful than two people. It's an exponential curve if they're in sync, if they have the same vision and the same dream. Two people can be the power of 10 individuals if they just work together. The nice thing about the request to clarify this is that these individuals want the world to be based on truth. They don't want any more inadvertent disinformation coming out of people like me misguiding people. And so they're trying to make sure that my game stays tight because they know me. And in the case of one of the people that live really close to me, they don't want to be caught up in a situation where I create a controversy because I'm saying something that's my bias and I'm portraying it as fact. And it's some very controversial thing such that we might get in trouble. I have shared with these individuals some of the deepest conspiracies that are out there that, you know, some of it I can barely cover on this show because it would create a big giant target on my back that I just don't need. So I wiggle it into the episodes. Some of you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes, you know, falsehoods have been repeated so much that they can't hear anything different no matter what you do. It's just embedded in their character. And hey, I'm not here to change anybody's deep-rooted beliefs. You know, I don't really believe that if I tell you my entire history of research in Jesus Christ, which has been tumultuous at times, having written screenplays for this stuff, using, you know, for that information, books, little mini novels I wrote when I was a crappy writer back in the day. I was diving into this stuff because I wanted to find it. I wanted to reference it. I wanted to use it in my material. And when I came up completely dry, the only thing I realized that it was that the people that told me he existed had just been told by someone else they existed. Anybody who thought they had physical proof, they just were told that by somebody else, and it doesn't exist. And then they were thinking, well, there's history books, there's papyri, there's stone, saying that he existed. Not for 350 years, when the Inquisitions the Inquisitions started. When they needed to pound it into the people because it was going to be the way. It was going to be Rome's way or nobody's way. The senators were made popes until they each died off and became saints. And then they created a nice pyramid structure with the pope at the top. Yeah, that's the way God works. Yeah. I don't think me sharing my path is going to change anyone's opinion. It might, but I don't think it's going to occur. And why is that? Because I think that if you're vested in a religion, it's because it benefits you in some way. It works for you. Again, I've never said, you know, I'm mentioning this a lot in episodes recently as I'm editing things. So I realize there'll be, you know, episodes in a row where I'm seeming like just poaching off myself. They're not recorded in a row. They're recorded all over the place. And it just so happens a stream of consciousness keeps coming back to me to make a point. What I found in doing this show, though, was a very interesting thing that I had, and I assume other people have it, which is that you will covet what you think is a fact. And then through talking to yourself, like I do on this show, or talking to you guys through the comments, I find out that there perhaps is really no evidence for me to believe even a possibility that things are different in a particular area than I've been taught. And so sometimes, it happens very rarely, but sometimes I have to let go and let the other one come back. Yeah, you know, I thought it was like that, but I really dug into it, really talked to people on the ground, got as many real-life stories as I could out of people that are related to people who still are alive, and I believe them, and it changes my beliefs. So what do you do? What do you do with this new realization that perhaps the battle for facts is merely the battle of paradigm adoption, aka media adoption, as Marshall McLuhan set forth? When I go to my smoke lounge, which interesting is that what we choose to get our facts and develop our opinions, it's primarily YouTube videos, which I know has a bit of a stain on it for some people because there is a bunch of crazy crap on YouTube, and then web pages that support things, and then the 17 movement, which sends us out to everything on planet Earth that's on the internet, every Instagram account, Twitter account, personal business websites. We are looking into people's lives by looking at the information that they submitted to the public at one point in time, using the WaybackMachine.org to look at people's websites before they change them. I mean, it is so absurdly meticulous, and I don't say absurd in a bad way. It's just that's the level of which it's happening nowadays. What we do is build a gigantic cloud of information, and then we sift through it logically by thinking and using our intelligence. And then we start to develop a picture. And then we toss it around, and we toss it around, and we toss it around for weeks and months before we ever really say, okay, I think that's what that is. You know, 17 guy, he could say that's exactly the truth on the first day. And, you know, we'll hold that, and we toss it around, and we talk about it. I mean, you guys that love this show, if you ever came to my lounge, you'd move here just to go to that lounge, I'm telling you. You know, I'm making this this sort of dream and example of having a university for all of us. And I'll say my lounge is that university in a very informal way. Ladies, if you don't like cigar smoke, it would kill you. But maybe we'll put together a hookah for you, which is probably not good for you at all. So what do you do when that's the process that I use to make information? I'm involved with a group of people that do this. And then all of a sudden I take a phone call with a friend or sit down for dinner. And I will simply say something as fact. And the person across the table or over the phone has no other option but to think that I flippantly came up with that opinion. Because there's no physical way for me to to go back and put them through the months and months and months and years of discernment over the thing that I'm talking about. You know, it would be as if, let's just say E=mc² is completely right about everything. Well, it didn't form overnight. It's an algorithm that's been around for long before Einstein ever tried to pawn it off as his own work. I know I owe you guys an Einstein video. I gotta go back and write everything down so I have like a script of facts. Right? There we go. So the interesting process that I go through is starting that conversation, realizing I'm in this quagmire of, damn, there's no way for me to easily put you through the torture that my friends and I put ourselves through to get to this point where I can just say, well, this is what it's really about. You know how long it took me to find out that climate change was about population control through taxation? To make energy cost too much, and then if you slip over, then you just get penalized because you slipped over. You know, you have the second child. You start paying to the state a penalty for having the second child. It took 10 years to decipher all the information and check it and check it and check it and look into Al Gore's world and the CCX and all this other stuff. You know, reading Kyoto protocols and the climate accord, and then watching countries respond to it over and over, getting insider information from friends of mine, sitting with frickin' Rothschilds and listening to them pontificate about how the world's overpopulated. It's thousands and thousands of little pieces of information. I'm not even going to call them facts. But, you know, some of these things just happen when my friend who I trust to the end of the world tells me I was in a room, I was supposed to be giving a presentation, I got basically interrupted and usurped for this other conversation. He says I couldn't even understand why they were so worried about this stuff. I mean, they were worried about it on a level that was crazy. And they said the Rothschild kid said, well, I don't even know why we're listening to this guy. Like, he's in the room, and he's like talking third person. We need to be talking about depopulation. So I don't want to take people through that. So how do we move forward? Everybody wants a simple solution, right? They want fast food, fast food, fast food. When I start attempting to take one of my friends down one of these paths, and I'm trying to abbreviate, I'm trying to put excerpts forth instead of taking them through everything. And it's even hard for me to recall all the conversations, of course. It's impossible. I can feel them wane. If they're looking me in the face, I can see them kind of going, okay, TMI, I don't need to know. And what's interesting for me is that there's this frustration that comes about to say, okay, I know that they're either listening to or talking to someone who, which is me, who has devoted his life to trying to find the truth at the expense of my own indigenous beliefs before I started doing this. It doesn't mean, because it's a struggle for me, that, you know, my conclusions are correct by any means. But I feel like a lot of times I'm having a conversation with someone that also is very busy with their life, and so they only have the time to just take it off of a website or take it off a page or have a conversation one time with someone. And the other person might have a lot more time to investigate things, but because maybe they're new to the truth movement, the sources aren't apparent. And, you know, the 17 movement is a great place to find information because it kicks you off into all these other beautiful rabbit holes which will consume your life. And some folks start to short circuit because they're like, I don't want to believe this. I don't want to believe this. The world can't be this horrible. The world can't be this complex. In my smoke lounge, we don't say that ever. We don't go down a rabbit hole. And as it starts to hurt our feelings, we don't ever say to each other, oh my God, I can't really talk about this because the world just seems so hideous and so bad. We don't say that. We just go in, you know. Most of us are guys, and so, again, you know, there's a big part of me that feels like, I've said this several times on the show, because I'm giving an example of two incredible females in my life, I don't really want them to have to know any of this. It's just, it's sort of like the built-in chivalry that, let us take care of this, let the guys take care of this. And it's not that you can't take care of it, but I can tell right now by just giving out morsels of the research that I had to do with my buddies, there's like a lack of interest or a lack of like, I don't want to really fill my life with this negativity. And I don't want certain people to have that negativity in their life if it's going to especially make them lose sleep or just have sort of a frequency of discomfort. I don't want any of my friends to have that unless they're hungry for it. And which is why I don't walk into public and say anything. I ate dinner tonight. And I had to hear a story. I ate dinner with some friends. And I had to hear a story about some very close friends of mine. These are like godparents kind of people in my life. They're not my godparents, but it's like that. It could have been. And one of the guy's wife is dying of cancer. And it's very apparent in the conversation, she does not want to die of cancer. She's just in her mid-70s. Her kids are starting to have grandkids, and so she wants to be around for it. And I'm sitting, this is funny, one of the females I'm talking about in this conversation is right across the table. And the other female is her mom. And of course, everyone's a family. We know everybody because from a small town. And I'm sitting there going, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I'm on to literally the third patient who came out of stage 4 cancer in full recovery right now using some of the methods that's in my cancer episode number 17. Again, go over to season 1, look up Deep Thoughts Radio season 1 channel and watch it there. So I'm sitting here knowing that there's a big chance that no matter how advanced this stage is of cancer, because the very first person I ever helped was in stage 4 with 6 months to live. I think in her early 50s. She is perfectly fine today. Within 4 months, she was cancer-free. She never did chemotherapy. And she used a free solution called vitamin C and vitamin B17. She cut out meats and sugars, drank carrot juice a lot, all cruciferous vegetables, was clean as a whistle in 4 months. Confirmed by her oncologist, who thought she went and got her chemotherapy. I've done it 2 more times. And every time I help someone, someone else in their life gives them the same exact recipe. So I'm not even the only person giving them the same exact advice. And so the conversation gets interesting because I'm looking at the girl in front of me and I'm going, you know what I'm thinking. She knows, I could ask the girl in front of me, recite the recipe, and she knows it, top of her head. But the person we're talking about over here is in her 70s. She's not going to listen to a free, simple solution because the oncologists of the world, the criminal motherfuckers that they are, have convinced her and everyone else in the baby boomer generation that you got to make it complicated. You have to drink a radioactive isotope or get radiation treatment to cure cancer. Less than a month ago, I had another girl tell me about a little kid in, I believe in Huntington Beach here, who's suffering from a tumor on their spine. It's inoperable. And, you know, supposedly all these doctors on the kid trying to figure out what's going on. They're trying to figure out what caused it, which is great. Do that research. Meanwhile, they're just getting ready to get their kickbacks from chemotherapy treatment. They're going to kill this kid. 93% chance this kid's going to die by using these draconian goddamn methods. And so I told her, I said, look, do you care about this kid? Yeah. Do you have contact with this kid and their parents? Yeah. Well, here's what you got to do. Let them do all their crazy crap, but you give them this recipe because it's going to boost the immune system, and the immune system is the only thing that can kill inoperable cancer. Besides radioactive isotopes that will kill the entire body. And so she goes back and starts talking to our mutual contact, her mutual contact with this kid, who's another good friend of mine. And the only thing they could fixate on was that the facts were coming out of the oncologists about the fact there's nothing that could be done for this kid. Kid's going to die, most likely. The empirical facts in my world is that people who take this little treatment survive. People with less of an immune system than a young kid, they survive. Doesn't matter how many times I tell them, they know better. And it's the facts, the bullshit facts that aren't facts in these people's brains, they're going to kill this kid. He's going to die. Because all the parents around them that are supposed to protect them are wrong. Now, there could be some systemic thing that's still in the body that even if you take this, it grows back. You know, there's important extra research we have to do. But at least you can keep the kid alive until you figure it out. And hopefully do whatever you got to do to stop it. But I guarantee you that the whole thing is living next to a high-tension tower, cell phones, eating crappy food. I mean, kids getting cancer is proof this is a man-made problem. Proof. But no one wants to be, I don't know, embarrassed? Wrong? Like I told you guys, I'm digressing a little bit, but it's important because it stresses the repercussions of indoctrinated paradigms of truth, aka facts. If I ever thought in my entire life I would assist someone, assist, because I'm only one of, again, one of two people that gives this recipe out to people that recover. If I ever thought I would contribute to someone losing their cancer, I would have thought, well, geez, what happened? Did I get touched by an alien or something? We have a guy in the comments section of the original 17 episode in season one on this channel giving his case study. He's like, I did this and it went away. I can't even believe this. It's like a miracle. Thank you. And again, it's not my idea. It comes from people that have cured cancer. And there's a million cures for cancer. Urine treatments. The Nipsey Hussle guy was talking about doing a documentary on a guy that's curing cancer. I need to research that particular one because it's something to do with the theory of carbon-based life forms and carbon-based intake and that kind of thing. And when you deviate from that, you start creating cancer in the body. It makes complete sense just at the face value. But Nipsey was just murdered, right? Now, again, the sad thing about Nipsey is that he's, you know, he bought into the banger world of rap, and so he could have just been murdered by some passerby. But what are facts for? Well, there's two paradigms at least of what facts are supposed to do for us. The first and foremost thing, which is probably the least prioritized area / meaning of facts, is to actually get something right in life. To be able to perform something the way that the facts tell you that it should be performed and have a result come out at the end of the equation. You know, you're supposed to go to college and get a degree, and then you get a job, and then you work in that job for 35, 40 years, you retire with a bunch of money in the bank, and you go travel the world. That's the American dream. It's supposed to exist. But they have infiltrated that and destroyed it. But that's what we want to have happen. That's not the most important thing, I don't think. I think the most important thing is to give people a sense of confidence and security in their life. And the more chaotic a person's life is, the more they want to, if they're awake, to get regimented facts in their life to kill the chaos. And you have to respect that. How do you validate a fact? Besides being in a laboratory or some controlled condition where you can actually do Occam's razor and say, it worked. Oh my God. Now, I have this little analogy for gravity that will further complicate things a little bit. for anybody who thinks that just simply doing an experiment in a room gives you proof that there you've actually seen a fact occur. Now, we know that if we drop things, they fall. We call that effect gravity. So it exists by that sheer definition. How they say it happens, well, that could be complete crap. Again, I say it's a push. Other people say it's a pull. I know I use this analogy a lot, but bear with me. We're going to go in a different direction here. I believe I mentioned this in the gravity episode. Now, here's the thing. You could have person A here and person B here. Person A is from 2019. Person B is from 1519. Person A is an atheist. Person B is a Christian. And this doesn't have anything to do with picking on Christianity, so don't worry about it. Person A believes in a phenomenon of official history, of official science, right? You go to Wikipedia, look up gravity, it says it's a natural phenomenon. Hilarious. That means we have no clue what it is because we've gotten rid of ether out of the model. All right. 1519, person B says, well, I know exactly what it is. What is it? It's angel power. What? Yeah, angels. They push everything down. Oh, so the formula that these two write a formula to figure out terminal velocity and all this other stuff, right? Okay. They have the equation correct. Their equation always predicts how fast something will fall and when it hits terminal velocity, and they can plug it into other algorithms to find out how much the glass will shatter, blah, blah, blah. Their formulas are correct, but their letters of what the force actually is might be different letters. One guy uses a PH for phenomenon because he has no idea what the hell he's talking about. The other one is using an A for angel power. When they do their calculations, they get the same result. Both believe they have the fact of what gravity is. Technically, they understand what gravity is because things fall. But technically and factually, they're completely wrong about what's actually causing it. You see how we can split this? An indivisible piece of information is probably the only thing that we can call fact, which means it's rough. Now let's pull back several light years away from this problem and look at it. Let's think about your soul going through a journey of life. Well, I've put forth dozens and dozens of potential objectives of being alive. I strongly believe at this point in my life that the pain and suffering that we might feel in this world is something that we have chosen for ourselves, because without it, life becomes the nirvana of hell. A Q continuum character, as I've said several times. But that's something you can see when you're on the outside, looking at your soul, potentially going back into a human form or some other form, some other place in the universe. And you realize, well, we have positives and negatives because it creates choice, and choice has its own little euphoric aphrodisiac to the soul. But as soon as you metabolize yourself, birth yourself, metamorphosize into a human form, we have a little agreement, don't we? You don't get to remember all that stuff that you knew when you were outside. Now, some people believe they can look back and see previous lives. I should probably do an episode on that because I have my own little experiences with that. But save that particular digression. We'll let that go for another episode. You know, if you're not having those visions especially, you're in this body, you're in this life, and you don't know how long you're going to live. You know you're going to die. And so the game is to suffer as little as possible, to have as much success as possible in every category that success can be measured or attributed to life. And so facts, even if they have a divisible nature to them, as long as, like gravity, you don't know what's causing it or what it really is, but you need to understand if you're going to, you know, roof houses, you don't want to fall off the roof and die, break your legs or whatever. You're going to have to adopt some of this paradigm of existence such that you can feel comfortable, hopefully more comfortable as time goes on, that you at least have some of this world figured out. And so we can't blame people for doing the best they can. You only have the mind that you have. The more you work your mind, the more neurons you get, and the more you can look at things from a more autistic level. You know, when I first heard, autism described by my friend who had, clinically proven 3 levels of consciousness running at the same exact time, I said, well, what's it like, and this guy, utter genius, fully functional guy, but he was the Rain Man autism, not the vaccinated brain damage autism. And he said to me, well, he goes, I've got 2 processors I don't need to use for anything. So I'm having a conversation with you, and I'm counting every pore on your face. I'm counting all the objects in the room, all at the same time. And I'm maintaining a conversation with you, and nothing misses a beat anywhere. It's almost as if the Rain Man autism is sort of the next evolution in mankind, if you think about it. Us having all these consciousnesses and being able to deal with them without feeling awkward. But then again, how do we acknowledge all these frailties in the process of coming up with facts? Especially if you think about it, we pay, and this is like a 10-year-old factoid, we pay the Army Corps of PSYOPs at least $1.5 billion a year in payroll to develop tools, information tools, to then infect our world with disinformation. We are paying for the psychosis that is a lack of identity in the world, a lack of true orientation as to where we are, what's going on, what's good for us, what's bad for us. So we're not fully developed as human beings. We're still being incredibly naive. And unfortunately, it would seem that one of the highest forms of intelligence is deception and evil. I mean, think about that day in September of 2001. Regardless of what you think about that day, was that day orchestrated by average intelligent human beings? Mm-mm. That day was orchestrated by probably some of the most brilliant people in the world. At so many levels of, deceptive press darlings to just everything you could possibly imagine. Aviation and information and demolition and potentially directed energy weapon people and just on and on and on. What positive thing have we done in the world has been equally intelligent, that's been for the good of man? My hope is that, in the things that I discuss on this show, that it benefits your life more than it hurts your life. I don't know that I've had an episode where anyone reported back, I followed your advice, or I did this and that, and I now am estranged from my kids, I'm divorced, and I died of cancer. I've never had anyone say anything like that. Do I question all of reality nowadays more than ever? Sure. But do I lose sleep over it? Not a wink. Not a wink, man. I go to work, I do my stuff, I keep my, my exploration mind for rabbit holes and conspiracies in one camp, and I keep reality in another camp. And what's funny is, if I date someone, it's funny. I often get this thing of, or even just a normal human being that's just a friend of mine, but I will have people say, in almost this fragile, scared voice, that, I don't know what it's like to be you. You live in a complete conspiracy world and conspiracy. And their perception of me in just a few sentences, a few conversations, if I happen to mention, my God, just low-hanging fruit stuff like JFK's assassination or, something really basic, their perception is immediately fear. one, that I'm right about something. They don't want me to be right about any of that stuff, and no one wants to be right in the truth movement about all these conspiracies, except if they're true, to stop them. That's something you need to repeat to anyone that has to listen to you for the very first time dump out your theories that are different. Your facts that are well explored and well analyzed and checked with your friends who come from all different ages and lives and disciplines. And so I think that some of the fact-seeking conversations, quote-unquote, air quotes, I should say, it's to sort of temper the throttle of information transfer as to limit it in a way that the mind can sort of bring it down to a level where it's not going to be as terrifying, disorienting. And I think that we do have natural defense mechanisms that just activate. You're listening to someone tell you something that you absolutely, positively don't want to believe, and if I may use the term, can't believe. And so that Kubler-Ross thing goes straight to negotiation. It's kind of vacillating between denial and negotiation. The denial is sort of the thing that people sometimes say. I just can't believe that. No, I know this and that and this and this. And how could this remain true? Or how could this be false if for decades and decades it's said to be true? That kind of talk. And then if they get past that, one of the defense mechanisms, I believe, is to try and throw the least used method is for someone to say, well, I just have to have facts. I can't listen to this stuff you're saying. And then again, we go back into the debate of this entire episode. That's not used that much in my life. And I don't think that my friends who are asking me to address this issue are necessarily in that camp. They're concerned about me personally, I think. Sometimes it's someone else's reputation. You know, someone's like, I can't repeat what you say, or I can't be with you in public engaging these conversations unless I play a very defensive position because I haven't had the chance to do the research. And that is a fully respectable tack to take. And that's something that should be spoken if there's a public forum going on, to say, hey, I don't have the same background as this person. This person is very certain about things that I am not certain about. So as we have this conversation, please keep me in a different camp until I get to this level, if I ever do. That's cool. I've told you several times, and I think there's at least a couple dozen of you that have run into this, the age-old tactic of someone saying, well, you don't have a formal degree in something that you're talking about, so you could be full of crap. All right. That's why I don't try to talk about, you know, chemical reactions, because I don't have a chemistry degree. It's one area of science that I've only delved into as I need to know, you know, when aluminum melts and when steel melts and fire-rated steel melts and what kerosene's top burning temperature is and blah, blah, blah. So it's just you dive in to get the factoid that you need, and then you hop out and you apply it to the overall conversations in a different area. I just made the episode about formal education. It is predictably not getting too many views, because I also pushed out the Neverland thing right on top of that, because I knew that, you know, formal education is just not a sexy subject. But it is my belief that for those who see that episode, who have that anxiety that my friend has, that I put in the episode, that I talk about in the episode, it'll do you a whole world of good to listen to it. But again, my favorite comment now that I developed on this show live, when you saw me say it for the very first time, that's when I had the first thought of it, which is, how many degrees did the people who built the pyramids have? How many degrees did every blacksmith have in this world? All the apprenticeship careers before universities were the method by which we judged knowledge in a human being. I have, it was interesting. We had a person come in and comment about Michael Jackson. And he said that he knew Michael and he spent quite a few years in Michael's circles. And so he had probably one of the best comments about the whole subject. And just saying, look, the guy was definitely strange, but he was anything but a child when you knew him. He goes, that whole kitty personality thing that he put on for the press was merely a persona that he invented. And there's a whole slew of videos of Michael speaking in a normal manly voice, too. Very interesting. But the commenter said he was extremely intelligent for not having a formal education. Barely ever went to school at all. I have other friends with the exact same aptitude. The most articulate, brilliant, discerning minds with no formal education at all and barely any other education because they were either a celebrity or they were involved in celebrity families where kids weren't allowed to go to school. They just were part of the set. They were part of making movies and life was taken care of. And they ended up brilliant human beings. Far more articulate than me. Far more. With brilliant minds. I saw a YouTube video today at my lounge, which talked about the ecosystem of disinformation, especially applied to the Democratic Party, of course, where they own the press, right? They own all the press, and Fox is sort of 50-50. They know where their bread is buttered. And so what they do is they put out a false story in blog form, then they pick it up and put it in national news, maybe even international news. Everything's international nowadays, right? And then the politicians run into town hall meetings or these little gatherings with like their 50 people that are there. And they quote from these artificial articles that are simply pulled out of someone's ass somewhere, right? The big nothing burger of the Russian collusion. Hilarious. If you believe in Russian collusion from the Trump administration to Russia, you know, stay in school, man. You know, when you're an adult like myself, your kids are already through school, everything's good, and you're sort of your own man, your own woman, there's an interesting sweet spot that occurs because then you can just craft yourself. Your sculpture. Your mind's a sculpture. It was LL Cool J says, my tongue is a sculpture. Yeah, he says, my tongue is a sculpture and this composition's over. My favorite lines from his song, I'm Bad. But now let's say you have a child. Either it's your grandkid or it's your kid. Now you have a responsibility to fill up this gas tank that is a child's mind. And if there's one thing I can say at the end of this episode, and hopefully this episode has absolutely shaken you to your core for what you think is right and what is wrong, but also given you hope that you can trust your instincts and your intelligence. If you're watching this show, you're hardly an average Joe. This is going to be about an hour and 20 minutes into this episode by now. The thing that I have stressed over and over is that as adults, to accept reality is to constrain it. Facts are the chisels that carve away stone that will never be back on that stone. Was it Michelangelo's sculpture, David? I mean, I looked at that sculpture as a kid. It made me feel strange as a kid. I'm one of those guys that has a weird thing with sculptures, at least when I was a kid. I don't know why. It's just strange. But when I grew up and found out that he was using foreshortening techniques such that when you stand at the base of David, he has distorted all the proportions such that when you stand there and look up at it, it's proportional. So he's shortened the perspective of him just a microscopic amount so that it looks perfect to the eye. But now that sculpture is one of the 8th wonders of the world that a human being could take a big giant stone. I mean, that must have been a horrendously large stone when he started. And he just kept tapping away at it until he created an absolute masterpiece of human creation. It may eclipse everything the Egyptians did. I mean, it is an amazing thing. But just imagine, a sculptor of stone can't make a mistake. I mean, today they probably could, right? A little super glue and they'd fix it up. But back in his day, you had to be perfect or you're out of the business. And he did a human form We all know what humans look like, don't we? It's instinctual. So if you made any mistakes, like gross mistakes, it has its style to it, of course, we would reject it. And that arm doesn't look right. That finger's too big, you know. His private parts, they were a little small. But, you know, that's our life. It's a big stone when we're born. Except that we can actually get bigger than the stone after we're born, can't we? Because we can just live in pure enlightenment and simply have facts presented to us with this methodology to say, if it's divisible, then there's interpretation, there's subjectivity to whatever you're discussing. Why is it, again, I think I said this on my first episodes, why is it the wisest men on earth back in the past, when men were the predominant sex that was allowed to go to university, the greatest thinkers that we've ever itemized in human history always came out of their universities after 10, 20, 30 years of philosophizing about where we were and what we were doing. They simply said, I realized I knew nothing. Why is that? Did they have less facts? Did they go in and get lobotomized? Hardly. I would assert that without the constraints of the horrible disinformation that we finance with our taxes nowadays, they were probably some of the most enlightened human beings to ever live that we know of in recorded history. And yet they came out and disowned their egos at the very end. They humbled themselves to the entire universe and simply said, you know what? Maybe I think, therefore I am. Maybe that's as far as it goes. Am I skating around the responsibility of presenting facts? Not at all. I think about it more now than ever. We're in this great awakening, sort of the Renaissance 2.0. That's what I would call it. And we're all excited. And I think we're excited because for the very first time, we're saying no to the formal sources of information. We now have a beautiful catchphrase. I don't know if you call it a catchphrase, but a beautiful label called fake news. It's very important. Now, I think this episode gets to the next level of the conversation. So you say that things may not be true. The history's been reformed, revised, erased. The victors wrote the history books, right? I'll put that episode out before I put this one out. I did it last night. The next step up is to say, okay, we have to get more existential with our discernment of information. Create a litmus test. You know, me saying a fact being indivisible is something I just thought up on this particular show, but it's starting to ring really well with my mind. That's a tall order, isn't it? Creates more burden on those that really want to know the truth. Could it be that we unite as a society, we kick out these deep state people, we get rid of all these news outlets that are feeding us a bunch of crap, we annihilate science with a capital S, the religion of science, we clean up the world, we clean up everything, and then is it possible for us to write some constitutional protocol for information gathering, information validation, and information distribution? You know, we talk about all the security all the time, about our internet stuff, as if we have anything that anyone really cares about anyway. But we talk about protecting the packets of information that travel from our computer to someone else's computer, such that no one can look inside the information and steal our information and eavesdrop on us. And so the data integrity is at its maximum. You know where it came from, and it's only going to who you wanted to distribute it to. Is there methodology for looking at the world and information and protecting it moving forward? Well, I just thought of another extension to this episode. I apologize for going deep and going longer. For those of you who like longer episodes, you're going to love this one. I have failed to mention one thing at just a pure term. The nemesis of a good fact is a lie. And because lies are the methodology by which you get your way when you can't get it legitimately, this is what the deep state does. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, forever. These people who take money to lie are extraordinary human beings. If you think about it, you're not raised to lie. I mean, certain families are, but very few. You know, people take money to get all the low-hanging fruit. Maybe they're sociopaths, where they hate society because society didn't accept them at a particular formative moment in their life as a youth. And so it's, screw you, I want to watch the world burn because I hate all of you. Anyone who doesn't show up at the high school reunion is a candidate for that. It's interesting. And probably not for big cities, but for little cities, little towns like mine. It's interesting. I think people bring me lies that have been labeled as fact. And I think that there are certain indicators that things are completely lies. When there's laws that say you have to believe something, there's a lie in there somewhere. I don't know if it's big, I don't know if it's small. It could be huge. That for me is a de facto moment where truth and reality are being distorted to advance a narrative and a belief system that is a lie. What was the Inquisition? Seriously, what was it? A bunch of mercenaries from the Catholic Church running around killing people and torturing people because they didn't believe the doctrine of the Catholic Church. Wow. Was that an act of God? Was that man forcing the belief of God into someone through the Savior Jesus Christ? I would submit not. You know, I mean, think about the beautiful story of Christ. Again, when I watched the Mr. Rogers thing, there's that beautiful moment in the documentary when there was a real incident in the outside world where a black couple was in a jacuzzi at a motel, and the owner said, get out of the jacuzzi, you're making the water dirty, or whatever his stupid rationale was, and they wouldn't leave, and so he started pouring, you know, bleach into the jacuzzi, forcing them out. And Mr. Rogers had a black gentleman who was a postman, I believe he was the postman, and he invited him to put his feet in a little baby bath. And he said, let's just chill out here. And that was Fred Rogers flipping the finger to racism on his show. And not only that, but when the guy had to pull his feet out and dry them off, Fred did it. Just like Jesus did it. As the story goes. So we have this story of this guy who visits prostitutes and poor people and people with leprosy, and he's doing everything he possibly can to show infinite mercy and acceptance and love. But the organization that's promoting this is doing anything but that sort of godly behavior. And that's how this thing took off. Lies. There's a preponderance of belief that says, if I can't think of it, it can't happen. If I can't think of it, then no one else can think of it. I can't imagine that anyone would lie about the moon missions, so no one can lie about the moon missions. I can't think about anyone doing an inside job, blowing up three buildings and another, like a fourth, that had some secondary explosions going off. I can't think of that, so no one else could, and therefore, the official story is the true story. As the 17 guy always says, we're fighting a war. And I think that the information war is the war. And it has to do explicitly with facts, to distort them, to disinformation, attack them, such that for anything that you hear the opposite. Cures to cancer that are outside of the oncology draconian crap of radiation treatment are all bunk. You know, someone posted on our, I think it was David, I think, one of our moderators or someone on the page posted an old advertisement of a doctor with a cigarette in his hand saying how cigarettes were good for you. And they even had advertisements back in the day telling pregnant women to smoke because they didn't want to have big babies, because it made for small children. And no one thought that was bad. No one thought it through. Well, geez, how could a doctor tell me to smoke cigarettes if they weren't good for me? Okay. Does anyone doubt that that was a bunch of crap back in the day? So why do you hang on to so many bullshit stories today? How do you do it? We should be questioning everything constantly and look at observable reality. I've got three people in my life who've taken this treatment for cancer. It's practically free when you compare it to all the other crap. You can order it on, you know, Amazon, for God's sakes. Don't go to Bezos, go to somebody else. But we have this place called Mother's Market down the street. They got everything. It's they don't have the high dosage B17, but they have 100 milligrams. You really don't want to take 500 at least twice a day, depending on how big you are. Can't hurt you. They can't hurt you. If you take too much, you'll just crap it out or pee it out. There you go. You're good. Your body takes what it needs. That's it. Just keep it full. That's my observable reality. It's people getting cured by this stuff. Well, if I were to stand in front of Johns Hopkins or some other big oncology joint that's worth trillions of dollars, and there's all these PhDs inside, these crazy people, and they have cured some people with this draconian crap, they could have someone standing next to me going, "You're going to battle that?" I'm going, "No, I'm not going to battle that. I'm just going to tell you what the solution is, or one of the solutions you could potentially engage." You can do every single treatment in the cancer episode, every single one of them. You won't lose your hair. You won't puke. You won't lose your appetite. You may want some sugar and meat eventually, but you can't. You're cured. You got to figure out how you got it in the first place and then get that crap. If you live next to a high-tension tower and you're catching cancer, you move the hell away. I'm really sorry. Rent the place out, sell it, short sell it, whatever you got to do. How important is it for you not to die of that stuff? It's not 100% the reason why, or conclusively the reason why people live next to them and they don't get that stuff, but they haven't died yet either. I think that the thing that people don't want to wake up to, and this is what I'll close with, kind of pull it all together. No one wants to believe the deep state exists. They don't. And even if they were willing to accept that it exists, they still want to put limiters on what the deep state's capable of doing and what they're currently doing to you. They just don't want to believe that all the food's bad for them. They don't want to believe that medication is bad for them. They don't want to believe their politicians are bought off, that they're judges. And it's just a few corrupt people in places in pretty much every place on earth, right? There's always a corrupt judge that's willing to take a paycheck to throw a case one way or the other. They don't want to believe that. And so they go into the denial phase. If they're willing to step in past the denial phase, they go into the negotiation phase, and it's all marginalizing the truth, marginalizing the evil, so they can go to bed at night. I say you should go to bed at night with a big giant grin on your face, because for the first time in human history, we are communicating as a planet about one thing. It's called truth. We don't know all the facts of the truth, but some of us have, you know, groups of friends, methodologies that are very scientific, that constantly reanalyze the first thing that we were told, the second thing we were told, the third thing we were told, and we just do Dell logic problems all day long trying to figure this stuff out. I mean, at one point, if you're trying to solve a particular issue, you put this all in your head and you constantly churn it. I know people that create excuses constantly, all day long, for everything they don't want to believe. And they're very smart people. And they come up with some pretty interesting, funny-ass sort of blank checks for the deep state, constantly. Well, I just can't believe this would be the case, because there's got to be enough honest people in that organization to blow the whistle and to report it on the news and da-da-da. And after you've lived through this for a couple decades, you're starting to laugh. You're just like, really? You really think that there's just this one reporter at CNN that's going to be like, doggone, and I'm going online, I'm going on the air live, and I'm going to just start spouting the truth? you know, it doesn't work like that. I'm sorry. It doesn't work like that. But what's nice is God gave you a brain, and he gave you a pineal gland, and he gave you a third eye, and he gave you a soul. And if you turn all that on at the same time, and you, one bone connects to the next bone, and you talk to the universe instead of to fake news or some article that makes you feel good about some evil thing because it's starting to marginalize it so you can sleep at night. If you just go with your instincts, listen to the frequencies of truth or lies, and continually analyze the data in your head, continually think, developing more brain cells, right? You stimulate your neurons, they procreate based on stimulation. I think you feel me. It's an important episode. Glad I did it. For those of you who have not gone to deepthoughtsradio.com, it's where you get all the information, all the links. The links are actually the most important part. Links to video, links to audio, links to Facebook. It is a locked Facebook group. Remember to say something human in your application for being in the group. I will, if I get an account where someone wants to be part of the group and they haven't said something human, if you look legit, I'll go over to your profile, take a look at you and see if your posts are recent, whether you've been talking in English or posting, you know, watches in China or something, and I'll either block you forever or I'll let you in the group. We have a Twitter account, which I just put up like 3 videos today, maybe even 4 videos today. I apologize for being really late on the Twitter feed. And there's a Patreon page for those who want to contribute to the show's bottom line. So for those of you that are up there participating in that, I appreciate it beyond your wildest dreams. It's just really cool because I know you care. And you care a lot. And it's always very flattering. So anyway, until the next episode, take care of yourself and someone else. Over and out.